Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
In 2005, two brothers hit the road to chase demons and fight monsters. You know, like you do. After 15 years, they made television history and built a community of dedicated and lasting fans.
Sure did.
I'm Rob Benedict, and I played God, a.k.a. Chuck Shirley.
Yeah, you are, and yeah, you did. And I'm Richard Spade Jr., and I played the Archangel Gabriel, a.k.a. the Trickster, a.k.a. Loki. I also had the privilege of directing a bunch of episodes of the show.
Have a few more a.k.a.s, why don't you? Jeez.
A.k.a. you're a jerk.
Though we've been involved with the series for years and multiple seasons, we never sat down and watched the entire show.
Oh, that's not true anymore. Now we're deep into it. We are going episode by episode and diving in with the folks who made it to bring you an insider's point of view and some great behind-the-scenes stories from the writers, producers, crew, and actors. And you're getting our pure, honest, unfettered reviews.
And along the road, let me tell you, we're becoming fans.
Buddy, we are super fans.
We've heard you saying it for years, and we finally get what all the excitement's about. This show holds up after all this time and deserves to be watched and rewatched.
We will be hitting on some spoilers, so consider yourself warned. And if you have any angry emails you want to send, please direct them to Babo.
Thank you for joining our journey and listening to Supernatural then and now. Hi, everybody. This is Rob Benedict.
And Richard Spate Jr.
And we're talking about season 4, episode 22, the grand finale of the season.
Oh, man. That's right. It is the grand finale of the season. What's it called, Rob?
It's called Lucifer Rising.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah. So we did it, Rich. We did it. We're at the end of season four.
A lot of people said we wouldn't make it through season four.
Nope.
But we did.
And really, I think what was in doubt was really our stamina. You know, they didn't.
Yeah.
Think.
And also our ADD would take over and we would just not be able to pay attention to the show. But you know, egg on their face because we did watch the whole show.
Yeah. Watch the whole damn thing.
Every episode of season four.
Next week, of course, we'll have our wrap up. It'll be live streamed for our Archangel Patreon members, which is exciting.
Oh, my gosh. I may join just to take a gander at what we're up to.
That would be nice of you, actually, because people would expect you to be there since you are the host of this show. During the live stream, one of our lucky Archangel members will win a signed, bound copy of The Monster at the End of This Book. That's the great episode from this season where, I don't know if you remember, Rich, that's where they introduced the character of Chuck Shirley. And they're going to get us not just signed.
Sorry, buddy. It's been a long season. What did Chuck have to do with what was the episode about?
Right. He's a monster at the end of a book.
Okay. Right. What is he, hideous, like, effed up face?
Yeah, he's pretty ugly. Running,
screaming into the night.
Yeah, he's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Here's my question, though. It's signed. Yes. It doesn't say signed by who, but bound. So they've actually went to a binder and got it bound.
They went to a binder.
Yeah.
Or maybe what they're trying to say is it's bound to get signed someday.
Gotcha. Right. So plus, I'm guessing you already know who our guest is. We'll be discussing.
I don't. Who is it?
Oh, our guest of this episode is Mr. Eric Edward Kripke.
E. Ed Kripke?
Yeah, E. Kripke. How did I know his middle name?
By the way, you know his initials spell Eek, which is probably why he's been in the horror genre.
That's amazing.
His entire professional career.
And now I'm mad that we didn't ask him that.
Eek!
Well, we'll be discussing Lucifer Rising with him in this episode. However, we have a special spotlight episode with Eric that is available on the Patreon right now. So we go way beyond his early career and, of course, all things supernatural.
It's a great conversation.
So please check it out.
What if he had a writing partner in his early days named, like, Andrew Abraham Harrison, and so he's like, they get a kind of rescue when
that's right.
It'd be great to be the receptionist. Eek and ah, can I help you?
Eek and ah, please hold. So check all that out on patreon.com/SPN then and now. You don't want to miss that if you're a true fan. All right, let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
Well, here's what we'd like to call the summary of the episode.
So wait, this is when you summarize the episode, correct?
That's it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do it.
It's 1972. It's St. Mary's Convent.
Rob Benedict is finishing college.
Rich has just announced his retirement. A priest possessed by Azazel gives a homily about Lucifer and then slaughters 8 nuns trapped in the chapel.
8 nuns, for those counting at home, is a boatload of nuns.
That's a lot of nuns.
A bunch of them.
That's a one-way ticket to hell.
It's a baker's dozen of nuns.
Back in the present day, the brothers are split up.
They're no longer dating?
They're no longer dating. Sam is with Ruby, lamenting the argument with Dean and feels it's best for him to stay away from his brother. Mm. Dean is at Bobby's, still angry at Sam and not interested in finding him.
Wow.
And Bobby tells Dean he's being a coward and shouldn't be pushing Sam away.
Right.
Mid-conversation, Dean finds himself transported to an ornate room where Castiel grimly tells him, "It's almost time." At a hospital, a possessed nurse steals a baby for Lilith to eat.
Hashtag gross.
Sam shows up, saves the baby, and takes the demon hostage. He interrogates it, and the demon reveals that Lilith will be at St. Mary's Convent tomorrow night. Ruby tells Sam to keep the demon alive so he can feed on it. The demon retreats into the nurse's mind, leaving Sam to confront the innocent, confused nurse.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dean is confronted by Zachariah in the green room. Zachariah tells him that Lilith needs to break the final seal to free Lucifer. Zachariah isn't answering Dean's questions. When Dean becomes frustrated, Zachariah reminds him that he pledged his obedience. Dean eventually calls Sam and apologizes.
So Zachariah is hanging out in the green room, what, eating donuts and having a cigarette before he has to go?
Yeah.
And actually clock in?
Yeah, making sure there are no red M&Ms.
Yeah.
Back in 1972 at St. Mary's Convent, Azazel is able to communicate with Lucifer through one of the dead nuns, who tells him that Lilith is the one, the only one that can break the final seal to free him.
Or!
And that Azazel must locate a very special child.
Wait, which Zazel?
Azazel.
Okay, so any Zazel. I thought it was a specific one.
Any old Zazel will do.
Okay, cool.
Back in 2009, Sam is on his way to St. Mary's with the nurse in the trunk of the car. He listens to Dean's voicemail, but unbeknownst to him, it has been altered.
Oh.
The message is now Dean berating and rejecting Sam.
Whoa.
Yeah, this makes Sam upset. He tells Ruby to prepare to kill the nurse so he can drink the blood to build up his power to face Lilith.
You know who's bummed about that altered message? The nurse. Because he's like, you know what? How dare he? You know what? Prepare the nurse. I'm killing the nurse. You hear the nurse in the truck going, hold on. I think you two guys could work this out. That's it sounded what, altered to me.
That's not what he actually said.
In the green room, Dean pleads with Castiel to help him find Sam. Zachariah reveals that the angels want Sam to free Lucifer. They want the apocalypse to happen. While Zachariah is gone, Castiel draws his blood and inscribes an angel-repelling sigil on the wall, which sends Zachariah away.
Right.
Dean and Castiel then head back to Chuck Shirley's, looking for information that will help them find Sam. With a touch, Castiel sends Dean to St. Mary's Convent.
Mm.
It's showdown time at the convent. Lilith and her fellow demons have gathered. Sam and Ruby arrive. Sam is supercharged and quickly defeats the demons and pins Lilith to the altar. Dean arrives to get in on the fight, but Ruby locks him out.
Aw.
Yeah. Sam hears Dean's cries and pauses for a moment. Ruby pushes Sam to focus and finish the job. Sam's eyes go black. He focuses his power and kills Lilith. Her blood fills the spiral on the chapel floor. Lucifer's cage is being unlocked. Sam is confused. Ruby reveals that she's been two-timing him the whole time.
What?
Yep, Sam and his unique powers have always been the key to unlocking the seal. Every time really gets me. Dean breaks in and kills Ruby with her own knife. The brothers share a silent moment. They know what is happening. Bright light rises from the floor, consuming them. Lucifer is rising.
Let's get into it. This segment, you know what I'm talking about. Robin Rich Review. Dude, bummed must Dean be with Sam going like, I told you Ruby was a bad egg.
Bummer. She had him going for, a couple seasons now?
I mean, forever.
Yeah. Enough to get engaged and get married in real life.
Yeah, and have a bunch of kids. I wonder if Jared still thinks that Genevieve is good for the family.
And how about the whole reveal that Lilith is the final seal? That's the big reveal, right?
Yeah, I know.
And it feels like this was kind of bound to happen.
Look at you using the word bound again. Look, I like Katherine Beckner. Great actress. Like watching her play that character.
Yeah.
Super fun. And yeah, it's bound to happen. A lot of, you knew it wasn't going to be smooth sailing for old demon-drinking Sam.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to process it. You know what I mean?
Well, let me try.
Because I think you mentioned it the last time. It's really a two-parter. So you're kind of... It's the second half of a giant episode, really.
It's almost a three-parter, but yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I think it's good. Anything with Kurt Fuller in it, it's got, a full cast of faves. You're in it.
I'm in it. That moment with Misha, I have a fond memory of that moment.
Oh, the arm.
Yeah.
Shoulder. Yeah, that's funny. So, you're in it. Catherine Beckner's in it. Misha Collins in it. Jim Beaver's in it. Kurt Fuller's in it. Obviously, Jared and Jensen. Am I missing somebody? Genevieve Cortese.
Genevieve, of course.
And then, of course, if I said Katherine Beckner, I mean, it's a heavenly host of fabulous talent.
I mean, I love the whole idea of that heaven was, that is possibly, the whole thing was just, it was going to happen. There was no stopping this from happening.
Right. It was inevitable.
Right. So, this was going to, and I just love this. It's a two-parter, almost a three-parter.
Yeah.
And... really a four-parter because this is a to be continued. And
right.
I know for a fact that the first episode of next season it's a continuation of what's just happened.
I would also say that, as guys who are just now catching up with Supernatural, this episode is I see a lot of clips of this episode, mainly Lilith up against the altar.
Mm-hmm.
They use that shot a lot in summaries of the series, of the season, and just great moments in the show.
Yeah.
Because it's really an iconic image with her in the white dress up against the altar.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
No, it's an iconic episode. And, you know, and directed by Eric Kripke, which is always a special thing.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You know, I guess I want to talk about, like, to me, the show is reaching such a height right now. And it's season four and season five were seminal seasons, I think. And, you know, to watch it in real time, it's really cool just the way that it all unfolds. I know where it's headed. I know who Lucifer is. And it's exciting sort of to see it sort of amping up to that. And also, I'm surprised as someone watching it for the first time, I'm surprised at how antagonistic the boys are with each other. You know what I mean? It's not, there's not like, you know, they've been antagonistic now for a while. When I think of them, I think of that, I love you, Sam, and that's my brother, and I'm not going to ever abandon you, and, you know, I'm bound to you for life kind of thing. But, like, really, they're just really at each other, and that's kind of the fuel of the series right now.
Yeah, I know. It's a little different.
And battling the biggest evil of all, like, Lucifer is unleashed. So, I don't know. It's an exciting time.
One hundy.
Yeah. Okay, so what kind of beer do you want to slap on this mother?
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. It seems appropriate. I'm not giving it a Stapleton.
Okay. Yeah, I could tell.
A 2024 Misha Collins.
Oh, yes, okay.
Which is a solid, solid review.
Yeah.
It's probably just a step down from Stapleton. I mean, it's just...
I feel like he's kind of cosplaying me and you, because he's got the gray and the brown and gray beard, just like...
Yeah, my beard is never... I think his beard looks a lot healthier than mine. I'll say that right now.
Fine.
So I'm going with 2024 Misha Collins. Very full, very impressive, well-groomed, looks good, flattering, great beard. Go with it for a long time and be very happy, and that's just a great beard. A solid, solid display of facial hair. Just maybe a step back from Stapleton. And honestly, maybe even the Stapleton thing is not happening because it's half of an episode. You almost need to review 21 and 22 together, but we're not doing that, so... It gets the Misha Collins.
All right.
2024 Misha Collins. You?
I'm gonna give it a Kenny Loggins. And I'll tell you why.
What era Loggins?
The We Are the World Loggins.
The hell? The 80s?
Did you not see this documentary on the making of...
I've not seen it yet, no.
Oh, it's fantastic. On Netflix, it's a documentary about the making of We Are the World, and everyone's talking about it. It's really fantastic. And Kenny Loggins... It's a vintage Kenny Loggins happening. So I'm going to give it a We Are the World Kenny Loggins, because I think this episode is crucial to the entire series in terms of what it sets up. I'm going to give it the old Kenny Loggins, the We Are the World Kenny Loggins.
Do you think for all of his device at home when he calls in to get help and they go, well, what are your logins? He just says, Kenny. Like, is it just... a nonstop confusing fest where he calls in for IT support.
What's your login?
Your logins, Kenny.
No, it's Kenny. Right. I understand that, Mr. Loggins.
Yes,
what's your
Mr.
login?
Loggins, I get it, but I need your logins. Kenneth? I don't know. Ken.
What if Kenny Loggins was a logger? Like he did the trick where he wrote on the logs.
Kenny Logger Loggins?
Yeah. What if Kenny Loggins, the logger, his favorite drink, his favorite beer, of course, is
a lager. Yeah, right, obviously. Right. So, and he starts to brew it. So it'd be Kenny Loggins, lager, lager. Or Kenny Lager, Loggins, Lager. That's right. I mean, that's great. But then what he has to give up drinking. And so he has to say, I can't do Kenny Lager, Loggins, Lager any longer.
What if he was the sheriff enforcing the law and he had a gun? It's a special sheriff gun. So it's his law gun.
Right? So that's what he called it?
Yeah. Kenny Loggins with his law gun.
Okay, but what if he wanted to, can't drink anymore, obviously, after his logging career and making beer, but he decided to turn into a career in the law. And so he started his own firm, and it was Kenny Logger Loggins, Logger No Longer Lawyer.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well,
for those of you who are still with us.
Okay. Well, this is really thrilling. We had a chance to sit down with the creator of Supernatural, Eric Kripke.
Does it get any bigger than that? Eric Kripke, he started the show.
He started.
It was his idea, his brainchild.
Yes, he's the real life Chuck Shirley, if you will.
Yeah.
You know him as the creator of Supernatural.
Yeah.
And the showrunner for the first five seasons. He's now, of course, overseeing The Boys and its various spinoffs. And he has quite an impressive resume that we get into in the interview. So let's just get right to it. Here's our interview with the credible Eric Kripke. Okay, so now we're talking about Lucifer Rising. We've got Eric Kripke here. Yeah. Hello, and thanks again, Eric.
Hi. Hey, thanks, guys.
We're good. Still good.
Oh, you got this. You're holding up, for people who are not watching this podcast, because it's a podcast, he's holding up the script. He actually has the ultimate.
Some of our guests, they go back and they watch the show. Eric has the script, so he just read the script again.
Yeah, I literally this morning printed out the script and reread it to refresh myself.
Amazing. Okay, so this season marked a real change for the show. Urban legends turned to angels and demons. Was your back against the wall urban legends like getting old, or was it more character motivated?
Yeah, we were creatively bankrupt. I mean, just
I don't believe that.
No, it was it wasn't that we ran out of them. There was a ton more. It's that as the show went on, it sort of evolved away from a Monster of the Week episodes anyway, and a little more mythology. And like, it was hard to connect the urban legends, right? Like, they're all fairly episodic and individual in scope, and pretty limited in scope, actually. And as the show naturally evolves, it wants to just sort of naturally kind of expand out. And so, you know, demons obviously have been on the show from, you know, the first minute of Supernatural. And I was very anti-angel for the first three years. I didn't want to bring in anything that could help the boys. I wanted them to be part of like the underdog, outgunned, outman thing, I think is really crucial to their identity, like that they're always up against impossible odds. But then after reading, it's a lot of like, this is super comic book nerd, but it was Garth Ennis's run on Hellblazer, Mibs, that I really started to see. And then his book Preacher,
I know Preacher,
and The Boys, which I'm doing now, is by Garth. But he was like a huge influence, because in Preacher, like, the angels are like fucking dicks, like scary dicks. And as I was reading that in between seasons, I was like, oh wait, we could do this where there's these demons, but what are they in it for? Right. And what's the fight? And then once you can kind of like, once like the, none of us are biblical scholars to say the least, but like once you could lock in like the moving towards Armageddon and moving towards this fight between angels and demons, another big inspiration. I mean, Neil Gaiman, I've said many times for Sandman, but his book that he wrote with Terry Pratchett, Good Omens, that they just made into a show on Amazon, but that is also building towards this huge war between angels and demons, and humans are kind of caught in the middle. And it's like, once I sort of understood that math, you know, that diagram, it really opened up the show. And that was sort of what we took into season four. And then that's what culminates Lucifer Rising.
I know that I speak for Rob when I say we're both massive Kurt Fuller fans.
Yeah, dude.
And Kurt is so good in this season. And it's kind of, we've had Kurt on. And it's kind of very non-Kurtian work. If you, I mean, like, Kurt so often plays the funny, the snarky humorist. And of course, he brings some of that to the role, which is why it's such a three-dimensional, awesome character. But it is such a cool role for him. Question about that. So Kurt Fuller auditioned for the show, because I know, because Kurt told us that. When you're looking at your, oh, guys are coming in, oh, shit, Kurt Fuller's coming in. Like, do you immediately think, man, we're like kind of swinging for the fences here? Because he was a known character actor at that
point. No, for sure. And I mean, my reaction almost always when something like that goes down, I'm like, what's gone wrong in his life that he has to be, that he's coming in to us? Jesus.
Yeah.
So no, it was amazing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but It's a Terrible Life was you know, he was like the CEO of the company, was his
first
episode.
And so he had a part that was a little more probably Kurtian, as you said. It was like he wasn't carrying the real menace of being an angel until the end, which is probably, you know, probably factored into casting him. But like, but I distinctly remember, like, he had these moments of, he brought this, what I love about Kurt. Yes, he's so funny and he's so witty and his timing is impeccable. But like in this particular character, like he could be scary.
Yeah.
And he would show flashes of that in that episode. And then we're like, oh, that's so interesting. And then, you know, so much of the thing that's really fun about TV, there's lots that's horrific about it. But one of the fun things is you can start tailor making a character based on things the actor's doing in a way that you can't when you're doing features.
And you do that really well. Like, I mean, I think there's a lot of characters, you know, including the ones Rich and I were able to play that you sort of took and then you're able to sort of build based on the character that was cast, the person that was cast. Yeah.
Yeah. You can sort of tailor a suit for the actor. And the more you work with them, the more you can start, like, once you see, because you guys just, you know, you just start taking flyers in the film and we're watching it and we're like, oh my God, that's so cool. Look what they did. We should write to that. So then we would start to write a little more to Kurt's mix of being really witty and, you know, and his dialogue in this one is sparkling, may I say.
Dude.
I'm just kidding. I'm not that.
But it really does. It fits in.
No, but it is. Like watching this, I feel like you just, that's what I'm saying. Like at this point, I feel like you, Kurt, now you're just feeding the machine exactly what it needs to eat.
Yeah.
Like his whole don't throw feces at the wall like a spider monkey.
Yeah.
Like was just great, and the way he delivered it was just gold.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing without his delivery. But the way that he can be, you know, really funny and witty and sort of blasé about the apocalypse, and then suddenly be scary. Yeah. You know, and suddenly be intimidating. And like that turn, it really, you know, I think keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a moment in this where he says something like, you know, so do as I say. And that's really, he's really icy cold.
Yeah.
So do you, so was this a second episode you directed?
Yeah. This was the second episode.
So it was the first one, you know. So I remember specifically when I worked on this episode, thinking that you all had spent a ton of time together. But really for you, your base was LA, right? So this was like, like it dawned on me that you're rarely in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, I would be there for like 2 weeks in the beginning, 2 weeks end. And then, you know, and then would pop in a little bit during the season.
I remember it feeling like it was kind of a treat. It was like a treat that actually Eric's up here.
It was a treat. Yeah, no, it is. It's a treat. It's really a great treat for me.
It's a treat.
It's a treat. It's,
I'm sure your wife thinks the same thing every time you walk in the room. Wow.
Well, yeah, no, I get that a lot.
Eric's here.
Sometimes I'll go downstairs and she'll be like, what a treat. We're there. And it's definitely.
It felt like a cool, if it did, it felt like a cool thing that you were actually there directing, you know?
Yeah, and directing's the best.
Well, so my question is, how much did that affect your, as a director, you're breaking into that field. Did that affect the way you approached writing scripts after that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like, the more that a writer can get their head around, that's why it's so important for writers to just produce their episodes and, you know, all this stuff for the strike and everything. It's just so crucial because you just need to understand that what you're writing on the page actually has to turn into three-dimensional space. And then directing even more so, because I say it to my writers all the time, which is they'll pitch something and I'm like, okay, picture me on set with that actor. And they're asking me, why the fuck am I doing this? What do I tell them? Like, really? Because someone's going to have to explain that to them. Like, why?
Right.
And it really helps kind of clear out the clutter and really help you focus on a character.
That's great.
It's like, you have to be able to define at any given moment what that character wants. And if that actor comes to you and says,
right,
hey, what, you know, I mean, one, the cliche way to put it is what's my motivation, but what you guys are really saying is like, what's the thing that I want in this scene? Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to say it.
Right.
You have to say like, you want to get out the door. You want to tear that guy's head off. Like it just, everything comes down to that. And I learned that from directing.
Ahoy, Rich Spade here. Hope you're enjoying the episode, but we got to pull over for a second for some messages. Thanks for listening. Now back to the episode.
So here's a question. You talk about the importance of writers understanding that process. Do writers on The Boys produce their episodes? Like, are they on set for their episodes?
They are.
So do you say that so the writers were on for The Boys, but that was not the process of Supernatural?
No, it's true. And
was that your call or how did that happen?
That was Bob. That's one thing I would do different. I would have the writers be on set. You know, Bob said, and you know, and he came from a world where a lot of your writers were freelance, you know, and not like producers living with the show. So I understand. Right. And it was just a slightly different process. And, but his feeling was, and he's not wrong, but his feeling was a writer is going to get maybe two or three catches a day that actually change what's going to be on the screen versus their asses in the room and can actually really move the ball forward. And he's not wrong. He's not wrong. There's a lot of just sitting around when you're a writer. But the thing that I learned and why I insist all my writers are on set now, yes, they're useful when something goes wrong up there, but they come back so much more useful.
Right.
Because now they understand. Yeah. They got to watch that actor up close. They know what's working. They understand the geography of the set so they can write to it. Like it's an education that makes them crazy better at writing the shows that they're on.
I would imagine also is that factor in it's the old storming the beaches of Normandy one sentence. Like when they do something and they say, oh, that one sentence I wrote took 4 days to prep and 12 hours to shoot.
Yeah.
Like maybe I should rethink that next time.
Or like whenever a young writer, because it happens all the time on every show I've been on. Like you have a young writer and they've got like action scene, night exterior. I'm like, are you sure you want that one, brother? And they're like, we got it. It's going to be great. I'm like, good luck with that. And in February in Toronto. And, you know, and they come back with like a glassy, and they're like, maybe it should have been day. And you're like, probably should have.
Inside the roller rink. do you remember there's a camera trick you use when Dean smashes the wall and then he kind of turns back and it's fixed? Do you remember how you did that trick?
Yeah. Well, I a lot of the things in that, in sort of that magic angel room, I had it, and I don't know why, because I'm so, this is reasonably douchey, but like I wanted as many gags as we could in terms of that shifting room. I wanted them all to be practical and not do split cameras and everything. So that one particularly was there were carpenters off camera who had a fresh panel. And so he would smash them and then you would go back. And then when we were on him and then you pulled the panel and put the fresh one in.
It's incredibly well done. It's incredibly well done because I watched that sequence a couple of times because I loved that you're doing practical and I loved that you did it with the burgers and the beer. He goes by the empty table. He turned around, burgers and beer. He did the smashing on the wall and the Castiel reveal, but the Castiel reveal makes more sense. I mean, you understand how the sausage is made because the actor's stepping in. But I literally watched the beer and burger one, and I'm like, okay, I know exactly what's happening. There, two people just are crouched off camera, and as soon as it goes past them, they set it down. And
they're all of those burgers and beers were glued together.
Right.
So that someone could hold them on a platter who was just off camera.
That's amazing.
And then we could put them there because I did feel, and it's probably true that like it wouldn't have been as cool if it happened in cuts. You want to prove that they're magically appearing?
100%. No, it's really a good device, man.
Oh, thanks.
It's a really cool device. But back to the wall one. The wall one is incredibly fast.
Yeah. And the other one I remember about that room that it didn't quite turn out quite as well as I wanted, but like
the door.
I was really interested in Kurt sitting in between two mirrors and then going off into infinity.
I love that shot.
Dude, that was great. It's cool. It was so cool.
If I could do it again, I would he's got too much headroom and there's a cooler place to put the camera, but
right away you see the brrr on down. That's cool.
Yeah, you do. We're behind a two-way mirror. And then there's a real mirror opposite Kurt. And I was really obsessed with trying to get that.
Cool.
Right. But I think ultimately I couldn't quite get the camera where I needed it to be, as we all have suffered.
Right.
But yeah, it was like a fun, because it's like a magical space. And at some point the paintings change and it's just like, it's a living thing, that room. And that was fun to f around with. The thing I remember about that room was, you know, and we're on a network show, so you don't get to like, you got to make your days and you got to shoot them out and whatever. Like as the carpenters, probably some of the grips, like as the grips were moving through the room, one of them tagged the chandelier with their ladder. Totally understandable mistake. But like the chandelier starts swaying and I'm like, well, can someone stop it. And like, well, no, because it'll just keep swaying and then you'll bump it. And then, so no, we just have to wait.
Oh my God.
We have to wait for it to stop swaying. 15 minutes.
Jesus. Isn't that crazy?
15 minutes. Yeah. The entire crew is staring at this fucking chandelier.
Oh my God.
Waiting for it to stop. And I wanted to put a gun in my mouth. Oh, I mean, man. I cannot believe
him. I'm sure the grip who did it too was like, I'm just going to go lay down under that sofa real quick. I mean, yeah, they had to feel terrible.
Yeah.
It's a funny moment when Chuck places his hand on Cassiel's shoulder. He wants to know if it's improv or not. Do you remember that? At the very end, we're looking into the light. And I put my hand on his shoulder and he kind of looks at my hand and I take my hand off. And I feel like we did come up with that on the day.
Yeah, that was funny, Rob. I noted that.
Right. That feels like something that was definitely done on the day.
I feel like you were like, it was a weird tableau with just standing next to each other. We wanted there to be something. And I feel like we came up with that on the day.
Yeah, I think for sure you guys did.
You were always very open.
Here, I can prove it to you.
Yeah, there we go. You got the script.
Yeah, what happens when they're standing there?
In the script, Chuck nods at the absurdity of it all. Then the light grows so bright, it blows the entire frame to white, leaving Cassiel and Chuck on the edge of the proverbial cliff.
So that's it.
There it was. Not in the script. There it is. There's proof.
Having fun on set. You coming guys, up with ideas.
Yeah, no. And it's so cool and fun. And that's where all the good shit. That's where all the good shit comes from. Yeah.
So the final two episodes, when the levee breaks and Lucifer Rising, have incredible character moments and performances. Were you guys aware sort of going into that? Like, okay, you're kind of building to this, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, this big Sam and Dean split. And I'll tell you who deserves a round of applause for this episode is
Genevieve.
Jen Padalecki is remarkable in this episode.
Genevieve, she's great.
You know, like the way she plays that speech at the end, and she's just like desperate and proud and pleading and in love. And anyway, it was just like, it was really, she crushed it.
Yeah. Great moment.
Yeah. And then, you know, like we knew that, like, there's that Bobby Dean scene and the way Jim like explodes on Jensen when he's turning his back on Dean. Like, I remember like that. I distinctly remember being behind the monitors being like, oh, shit, that's exciting. That's wow. He, you know, like just the way all of you just, you know, you commit to it and you get and you go all the way in. And
yeah, that felt very honest, too, for Bobby. Like it felt like the right move, you know, what he would actually do in that situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, just a couple more questions and we'll let you go. So as the EP, you're giving guidance from afar and hoping it makes it to the front lines. You directed this episode. How's that pressure different?
In a lot of ways, it's a lot more intense. You know, look, it's a season of running a television, especially like network TV. Like, I'll never fucking do that again. I mean, 22 episodes, 23 episodes a year. Like, that's ridiculous.
I'm not sure that's going to exist anywhere, though, anymore. Yeah. I think that may be a dying ember.
You know, and look, I take a certain amount of pride that in the world of show running, like, it's like, you know, the few of us that are still around that are like, we're extreme sports, you know, like, you know, we were the big wave surfers of the showrunner world, where it's just like, it's so stupid.
Can't you use that in your writer's room to your advantage? Like, if somebody's like exhausted and it's episode 9, you're like, listen, mofo, we weren't even a third of the way done by now. So suck it up.
1,000%. Yeah. We're like, bro, good for you. We're doing 8 episodes. Yeah. Like, let's chill out.
You'll survive.
And it makes you really confident too, because you're like, I've done the worst and hardest version of this job. I forget what the original question was. Just
more pressure, being up there.
Oh yeah. So it's hard, right? But at the end of the day, you're in an office every day. It's an office job, you know. Like, you go in, there's a lovely lunch that someone, you know, that a PA has to pick up. You're at a desk, you know, like it's not physically strenuous.
Right.
It's still even on hard days, just because you can't write much longer. And there are 10-hour days, 11-hour days at the most. So, you know, I always said, like, directing, and I can only really do it at the end of the season when all the scripts are done. And it's sort of like directing, when you direct, it's like you climb Everest throughout the season, and then you get at the top of Everest, and waiting at the top of Everest is another Everest in a totally different way. So the exhaustion, you know, I just directed the season 4 finale, and it all came rushing back on the boys, and it all came rushing back because you're so like just drained from getting a season out. And then you dive into the 15-hour, 16-hour days, the far-flung locations, the, you know, how sharp you have to be the time. Those last 2 hours of directing on any given day is brutal because you're exhausted and you're the one who has to be sharp. So I'd say like it's physically really demanding, but directing is the best. I like directing more than writing. I prefer it. It's just, you get to work with you guys and you get to really build it, you know, and find it. And that's a blast.
And I love working with the both of you. I mean, it's great to have a director who can wear multiple hats too. Yeah. I think that helps. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes a cowboy hat and sometimes
a cowboy hat, a chef's hat,
a beret.
No, hold on. Before we go to the last question, I don't want to do the last question yet because I want to ask a question that I thought we were going to ask earlier and we didn't get to it. But I want to confirm or deny a story that's been told to us by an actor on the show, a young fella, Misha Collins. And this is Misha Collins reported to us.
I'm trying to place it.
You may not remember him.
He had a smaller role.
Yeah,
he was kind of there in and out real fast. Not an impact player. He says that at some point, I can't remember the details of this, Rob, fill in the gaps if you do, that he had been doing episodes but was just doing freelance episodes as Castiel. And at some point he came to you or called you or something and said, I think you should make me a series regular, to which you said, okay.
Right. 1,000% true.
Wow.
And 2, I remember that distinctly. And that was like a moment. There's many moments I fell in love with Misha. And that was a big one because he's talking about it. Like, I mean, I asked him for I asked for a job and he gave it to me. My take on it was totally different, which is like, we could lose him at any given moment to another show. And he wasn't really asking for much more money at all. This wasn't like hey, give me a ton of money. I think he wasn't even asking for a raise, period. I think he came in and he said, hey, look, I really love this show and I really see it as a big opportunity for me. Like, bring me on as a regular at what you're paying me and lock me in first position so I can't go do other stuff if it comes up. I want to be here. I want to be committed to this. And
job security he was seeking more than anything probably, else, right? I mean, kind of.
Probably. But I took that as like, that's amazing, dude. Like, you know, you're not trying to, you know, game the system and get a bigger role out. And like the commitment, I remember just being so honorable. I'm sure for him, it was like, I got a steady job and a big fat fucking raise. And I'd really pull a fast one on that asshole.
He's series regular in season 5.
I think like halfway through season 4, I feel like he became certainly season 5.
I tell you, I don't know if you know this, Eric, but that story never happens. I just want you to be abundantly clear. Actors don't ever ask, but if they do ask, they ask John Mills, and John Mills goes, or you can go fuck yourself. it never works out to be a yes.
I was like, what a great fucking guy. I remember it as amazing.
That's great. Well, Misha is a great guy. And I'm sure the way he presented it was, as you say, genuine and humble and exactly as he is.
Once we locked him in, he proceeded to shit the bed over and over.
And that's when he bought the DeLorean and started wearing fur pants. Yeah.
Don't buy the cow if you get the milk for free. Everybody knows it.
He's
wearing leather suits.
That's hilarious. Smoking just cigars on the screen. VFX it out. I'm not putting it out. Anyway.
All right, we have one more question. And that question is, in Lucifer Rising, the green room that Dean wakes up in resembles the room that Dave wakes up in at the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey. Ooh. Is that intentional reference?
That rings a bell. I mean, I don't have like immediate recall, but I remember Jerry Wanick, he always is presenting like concept art. And I think he, in terms of like that type of furniture and that type of stuff, I remember him showing me images from 2001. So I'm going to say yes. That's a yes.
Okay. I like that.
It's a hard yes.
There you go. Yeah. Dude, please let this not be the last time we do this.
Please.
I mean, it's so great having you on and talking about it.
No, it's fun talking to you guys, man. I love hanging out with you guys. This is fun.
So fun, Eric. Awesome. And
honestly, a real treat to chat with you. Thank you.
I'll look, if I had the choice between actually working or douching it up, about what a treat I am. And you bet your f-ing ass I'm going to pick that. I mean, come on.
If there's one takeaway.
It's that I'm a treat.
From today, is that you're
it's
a
so
treat.
Funny. And it's like,
you're a treat. That's where I'm walking away. He's a real
really
treat.
Really knows me. They're like, oh, that is.
Jeez. Yeah,
and I'm like, you, and
treat
I,
and, is not the and word. I'm
like, I know what it's like inside my head. I am not a treat.
No. All right. Love you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
I love you guys. Thanks, guys. That was fun. It's good seeing you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, this is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We are going to take a quick break. Hey, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan again. Welcome back to the podcast.
Well, that was great.
Yeah, it was great. And you know what? We always talk about origin stories here on the podcast.
We do.
But you don't get more origin than the guy who had the idea.
The guy who
came up with the concept.
Right, yeah.
I mean, no Eric Kripke, no Sam and Dean. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We ask everybody, like, so what's your, how did you come across Supernatural? But this is the man who thought it.
He gave birth to this whole baby in his brain. And
yeah.
I love it. I love hearing how he teamed up with Bob Singer. I love that he's like, yeah, Bob wanted to leave me alone and play golf. So I hired him.
Yeah.
Perfect.
He's so great and such a nice guy too. And yeah, and like I said, I remember specifically that it was a really special thing having him up in Vancouver directing this episode. It was cool to be a part of that, you know, having the guy, the man there. Yeah, well, that was fun. What fun.
Really interesting guy, funny guy, smart guy, and a great interview.
I give the interview a Kenny Loggins.
I give the interview a Chris Stapleton stapled to a Kenny Loggins.
Oh, interesting. Well, with a log gun.
Drinking a lager, obviously.
All right, shall we get into the mythology?
We can, if you want to go down that road. But if we're going to do that, then I have to do this. Mythology! 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 Mythology!
So, let's talk about St. Mary's College.
You mean Hell House?
The Hell House, yeah. There are numerous legends about this now-closed seminary in Ilchester, Maryland.
Never heard of it. I mean, I actually didn't know this is a real thing, based on a real thing.
Me neither, until just now reading about it. So tell us about it, Richard Speight.
Oh, hold on. I can read this. You're right. It was founded in 1868. It eventually closed in 1972 due to dwindling student enrollment. I guess the whole Hell House thing didn't look good on the pamphlet.
Yeah.
Rumors surrounding the true cause behind the closure of the college began to spread soon after its closing. One such rumor suggested that a deranged priest had gruesomely murdered several female students. Another tale told of a priest violently sexually assaulting nuns within the college, which, no thank you to all of the above.
Not good.
You know what I mean?
No. The narrative's conclusion varied across rumors. In one version of the story, the priest evaded capture while demonically possessed nuns unleashed carnage upon the college's residences.
Well,
no wonder.
Bummer for the college residents.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, hey, are you going to catch the priest? We're going to, but we're worried that the possessed nuns that he's you know, infiltrated may unleash carnage. So I'd maybe stay out of the quad.
Jeez Louise. I had no idea.
Unless you want carnage unleashed upon you.
I can't believe this is real. I can't believe this is an actual. Shocked. Alternatively, some accounts describe the discovery of the nuns hanging by nooses with a blood-drawn pentagram below and the priest dead by his own hand.
Ah.
Despite St. Mary's College's identity as a seminary for men, not a convent, these stories, among others, circulated widely, earning the institution the moniker Hell House College.
Yeah, that tracks.
Which looks good on a pamphlet.
So I see you have a lot of work experience, and a graduate of Hell House College.
Oh, yeah. Go Demons.
Did you were you there during the the unleashing of the carnage? Yes, I was. All right, here we go. Yeah. Now, as if that wasn't fun enough, it's time for fun facts. Fun facts. Fun facts. Fun facts. Fun facts.
The newspaper with the article on the priest killing the nuns is dated for Friday, October 16th, 1972. However, October 16th, 1972 was a Monday.
I knew it. It ate at me the entire episode.
I'm going to change my beard rating.
Father Lane, a priest possessed by Azazel, is named after Frederick Lane, our very own Freddie Lane.
Yeah.
The actor who played Azazel during the show's second season.
Wow, that's quite an honor.
Yeah, man. There's no Father Benedict in the show.
No, hell no. Which would have made more sense.
Yeah.
When Lucifer's cage opens, it opens with bright white light. This is appropriate because Lucifer's name means bringer of light.
Also, ruiner of parties.
I had no idea. Bringer of light.
And rainer of carnage, I guess.
Yeah.
The green room features several Renaissance paintings, including Blind Man Bluffs by Jean-Honoré Fragonard. Landscape with Nymph, Egeria, and Mourning over Numa, which, by the way, could have used a workshop on the title department, by Claude Lorraine. St. Michael Killing the Dragon by Jossi Lefernier.
You're doing great.
The Damned Cast into Hell by Luca Signorelli. And Last Judgment.
This is also the name of the actors in Supernatural.
Luca Signorelli?
No, The Damned Cast into Hell.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the casting office called.
Yeah.
And Last Judgment by Stefan Lochner.
That's great. You killed it.
Thank you.
You really killed it. During the scene with Chuck on the phone, the current draft of Lucifer Rising is on his computer screen. It has his address listed as Kripke's Hollow, Ohio, 43301. 43301 is the zip code in Marion, Ohio, which is 90 miles south of Toledo, Ohio, where Kripke was born and raised. You can also see Chuck's email, which is carveredland@gmail.com.
And interestingly, wow. Rob's home address is as follows. Oh, I bet Trey cut that out. Trey, I just gave out Rob's address and you cut it out, you jerk.
Interestingly, and not related, Rob's phone number is... That's funny. Wow, I was there. I mean, I feel like I maybe saw that it was Kripke's Hollow, but I didn't link all that together. And the fact that there's an email, I wonder if anyone ever stole that email. Well, they have now.
Yeah, now they have.
Well, that's some interesting, fun facts. Do you want to do another reading of the Green Room Renaissance paintings, or you think we're good?
Yes, I do. You ready? Here they are. Blind Man's Bluff by Jean-Honoré Fragonard. Landscape with the Nymph Egeria and Mourning over Numa. Again, too long a title. Let's just call it Nymph. I mean, that now you got my attention. Anyway, Claude Lorraine. St. Michael Killing the Dragon, which is not a euphemism for anything, I don't think, but I haven't seen the painting recently, by Jossi Lefernier. The yep. Damned Cast into Hell by Luca Signorelli. Last Judgment by Stefan Lochner. I really am in the pocket today. You know what I mean?
You really are. You really are. I'd like to think that the only name you mispronounced is Stefan Lochner. He's like, it's Lochner.
Or Claude.
Yeah. Anyway, great job.
Great job.
Great episode. Great interview. Just great.
Yeah, man. Great, great, great. Just a flurry of greats.
And well done this season, Richard. Good job. Season 4, you killed it. I guarantee you that I'm gonna clock out after season 5 because my character's not in the show for a while after that.
Yeah, I get it. No emotional reason to stay.
I'm excited about season 5. We got the introduction of Lucifer. Yeah. We've got I know for a fact we've got Richard Spade's character coming back.
Yeah, can't wait to find out who plays Lucifer. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, I know. I hope we can get to whoever that is on the podcast.
Surprises are coming. All right, good stuff. And onwards and upwards, my friend. On to the next season.
See you there. This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester, Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester, and Misha Collins as Castillo.
Guest stars include Jim Beaver, Genevieve Padalecki, Rob Benedict, Kurt Fuller, Catherine Beckner, Rob LaBelle, Juliana Wimble, and art by Jean-Honoré Fragonard, Claude Lorraine, Josie Lefernier, Luca Signorelli, and Stefan Lochner.
Lucifer Rising was written and directed by Eric Kripke.
Editing by Tom McQuaid. Music by Christopher Lennertz.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The original broadcast of this episode featured the song Carry On, Wayward Son by Kansas and featured art by artists like Jean-Honoré Fragonard, Claude Lorraine, Josie Lefernier, Luca Signorelli, and Stefan Lochner.
That's Lochner! This episode originally aired on May 14th, 2009.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spate Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine, written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
This episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at www.patreon.com/SPN Then and Now. Dude, that's the first. People will watch the episode, but nobody looks over the script to get their memory jog.
Weirdly, it's quicker for me.
Yeah.
Just go over the script.
You're like, oh, that one.
Right. Yeah, you can come. It's my one.
All right, Dana. Is it a treat to have Eric sitting in that room?
Can't hear, okay, but yes. because we're doing a podcast. She rolls her eyes.
Good.
So that's the kind of treat.
That's what my wife does,
all
too.
All of our partners do the same thing.
I'm still laughing at first-time listener, long-time caller. That got
me. I keep calling, but I don't know what I'm listening to.
Story Mill Media.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.